Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Ethiopian officials say at least 200 people were killed Friday by a South Sudanese ethnic group called the Murale. Media reports say more than 100 women and children were kidnapped. The Murale are based in the eastern Jonglei region of South Sudan. Ethiopian Communication Minister Getachew Reda told the Associated Press close to 60 attackers were killed. He said Ethiopian forces may pursue the gunmen and those kidnapped into South Sudan. Ethiopia is home to thousands of refugees who have fled South Sudan. More than 270,000 of the refugees are in the Gambela region, which borders Ethiopia and South Sudan. The refugees fled to Ethiopia in late 2013 after war broke out in South Sudan. Thousands of refugees have been killed, and more than 2 million have been forced from their homes during the war.
Strong earthquakes occurred in southern Japan on Thursday. A much stronger earthquake struck Ecuador late Saturday. Anne Ball tells us about the rescue efforts taking place in both countries.
Efforts to rescue victims continue after strong earthquakes in Ecuador and Japan killed hundreds and injured thousands. In Ecuador, officials say at least 350 people died and more than 2,500 were injured in an earthquake that struck the coastal area late Saturday. Officials say the number of dead will increase as aid workers reach isolated areas. Rescuers are digging with their hands and tools to find survivors under collapsed buildings. Soldiers have been deployed to areas hit by the earthquakes. President Rafael Correa visited the coastal city of Manta, where the earthquake caused much damage. He said the earthquake was the worst natural disaster in his country since 1949, when thousands of people died in an earthquake. Officials say the quake was felt throughout the country. It stopped electricity and mobile phone service throughout the capital, Quito. In Japan, the U.S. military is helping Japan recover from three powerful earthquakes there. At least 41 people were killed in southern Japan on the large island of Kyushu. Officials said as many as 100 people were trapped under collapsed buildings in Kumamoto Prefecture. In addition to the dead and the missing, almost 2,000 people have been hurt since the first earthquake struck Thursday. Buildings collapsed, fires and landslides occurred. Two stronger quakes struck on Friday and Saturday. On Sunday, the Japanese government sent 25,000 self-defense force troops to help people on Kyushu. Officials say many people are trapped or buried under collapsed buildings or homes. About 200,000 people are in evacuation centers at schools and government buildings. Officials will not have complete damage reports until all the communities are reached. Dangerous aftershocks often happen after large earthquakes. Experts say they will be felt in southern Japan for more than a week. There have been more than 450 aftershocks since Thursday. There is no connection between the earthquakes in Japan and Ecuador, says Gavin Hayes, a research geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey in Golden, Colorado. Earthquakes are random, he says, and sometimes they happen around the same time. These recent ones are not connected, he says. What Japan and Ecuador do have in common is that they are both part of what is called the Ring of Fire. That is the area around the edges of the Pacific Ocean, like coastal Asia and coastal North and South America. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, 90% of the world's earthquakes happen there. Earthquakes happen when the plates, or the crust and upper layer of the earth, move against each other. When they shift, it causes the earth to shake and shudder, moving energy along the lines of the plates. These lines are called faults. Hayes says earthquakes are not increasing or getting worse than in the past. What is different is word spreads more quickly now. We are in a situation now that everyone is in tune with the internet and media, and we're hearing more about earthquakes than in the past. With Twitter and other social media, Hayes says, people can post pictures and information immediately after an earthquake. I'm Anne Ball.
Brazil's lower legislative house voted to impeach the country's president late Sunday. The impeachment process comes as Brazil prepares to host the Summer Olympic Games in August. Mario Ritter has the story.
Brazil's political turmoil has intensified as lawmakers voted to carry forward the impeachment process against President Dilma Rousseff. Lawmakers in the lower house of Congress voted late Sunday to send the case to the Senate. Now, Brazil's upper legislative house is to decide whether to try Rousseff. She has been charged with manipulating budget accounts before her re-election in 2014 to make the country's economy appear stronger than it was. Rousseff has denied any wrongdoing. The vote to impeach the president required a two-thirds majority of the 513-member lower house. Some of Rousseff's supporters cried after 367 members of the house voted to move the process forward. José Eduardo Cardoso is Brazil's attorney general. He called the vote a coup against democracy. The announcement of the vote caused cheering, music, and dancing on the streets outside Congress, where a huge crowd of Rousseff opponents had gathered. The Senate could vote in early May to move forward with a trial for Rousseff. If it does, she would be forced to step down for up to 180 days while an impeachment trial is carried out. A simple majority is needed to go ahead with a trial in the Senate. Brazilian media reported 45 out of 81 senators support a trial. Vice President Michel Temer would assume the presidency if Rousseff is suspended. However, he has been implicated in the investigation of corruption at Brazil's state-run oil company, Petrobras. He also agreed to some of the government's budgetary actions that are at the heart of the impeachment case against Rousseff. Rousseff did not make an immediate statement after the vote against her, but was expected to give her reaction later Monday. The International Olympic Committee said the impeachment process against Rousseff should not stop work leading up to the Summer Games. The Games in Rio de Janeiro are set to start August 5th. The committee said preparation has entered into a very operational phase where these kinds of political issues have much less influence than at other stages of organizing the Olympic Games. Brazil is also in one of its worst economic recessions since the 1930s. Many of Rousseff's critics blame her. Some public opinion studies show Rousseff's popularity has dropped below 10%. Other opinion polls show 60% of Brazilians support her impeachment. Rousseff has not been accused of corruption, yet her government is being investigated over bribery accusations related to Petrobras. Congresso em Foco is an activist group in Brazil. It said that more than 300 of the lawmakers who voted against Rousseff are under investigation for corruption, fraud, or electoral offenses. The Speaker of the lower house, Eduardo Cunha, has been charged with taking $5 million in bribes in the Petrobras scheme. He is also second in line to the presidency. I'm Mario Ritter.
Scientists say a volcano in North Korea is at risk of erupting. Jim Dressback has more.
Scientists say Mount Paektu on the border of North Korea and China had one of the largest eruptions in history. That eruption took place around the year 946. In 2013, researchers placed seismometers on Mount Paektu. These meters measured seismic waves beneath the volcano. Seismic waves are waves in the earth produced by an earthquake. The volcano had been quiet until 2002. Then earthquakes started until 2005. Now scientists have discovered soft and melted rock beneath Mount Paektu. They say magma is rising to the surface, and that proves the volcano is active. The U.S. State Geological Service defines an active volcano as any volcano that has had at least one eruption during the past 10,000 years. Mount Paektu is the tallest mountain in North Korea. Its elevation is close to 2,700 meters. The information from the study was published in Science Advances Journal. I'm Jim Dressback.
A judge in China ruled against a gay couple last week in the country's first case about same-sex marriage. A court in central China dismissed the suit that the couple brought against the local government. The couple said the local government bureau would not issue them a marriage registration certificate. The ruling was not a surprise. The couple's lawyer said he expected the ruling, but a judgment in under 4 hours was a surprise. The lawyer argued that Sun Wenlin and Hu Mingliang should be allowed to marry because the laws in China do not specifically ban marriage between couples of the same sex. The laws only address marriage between a man and a woman. Sun says the fact that marriage between a man and a woman is legal does not suggest that marriage between two men is illegal. The couple will have to pay a small fee, about $7, in court costs. The couple says it plans to appeal. China does not recognize same-sex marriage, and government officials say they do not expect that to change. The case received a lot of attention inside China. Hundreds of people arrived at the courthouse, hoping for a chance to witness the arguments. But only about 100 were admitted. Sun talked with the Associated Press news agency before the hearing. He said he hoped other people will see same-sex marriage as a possibility. I hope I can pave the way as far and wide as possible so that people who want to do the same will see how much we have tried and what possibilities there can be. Homosexuality is not illegal in China, but same-sex couples do not usually live openly. I'm Dan Friedel.
This is What's Trending Today. Justin Trudeau has been the Prime Minister of Canada for only about 6 months. In that time, he has impressed people by greeting an airplane filled with Syrian refugees, showing off his ability to do yoga, and participating in traditional Indian dances. But last Friday, he showed off his intelligence, and everyone loved it. Trudeau talked with reporters after visiting a physics research center. He stood in front of a board with complex physics notations. One reporter said, "I was going to ask you to explain quantum computing." But then he asked him a question about Canada's work in fighting against the Islamic State terror group. Trudeau stopped the reporter. He told him he actually did know about quantum computing. Trudeau then said, "Normal computers work, it's one or a zero. They're binary systems. What quantum states allow for is much more complex information to be encoded into a single bit." Trudeau continued his explanation of quantum computing for about 20 more seconds. A video posted by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has already been viewed more than 7 million times. A lot of people are still talking about the video. They are impressed with Trudeau's explanation of quantum computing. One Canadian wrote about the video on Facebook. "My Prime Minister can explain the core principles of quantum computing? I just teared up a little." Another person on Facebook wrote that Trudeau is not just a pretty face. He is also someone who embraces his inner geek and nerd. But others on social media wondered if Trudeau should have answered the reporter's other question about Canada's role in the fight against the Islamic State. A Canadian blogger, J.J. McAuliffe, criticized Trudeau. He said he thought the question and answer on quantum computing were planned in advance. He added that reporters should challenge the young prime minister more often. But most Canadians were not worried about that point of view. They were only celebrating their prime minister's intelligence. One social media user wrote, "I'm not going to second-guess this man's ability to run the country, because it's obvious he's very capable." And that's what's trending today.
A few days ago, a man named Arif ran barefoot with his family from an Iraqi village as American fighter jets dropped bombs from above. They walked 25 kilometers through deserts and valleys. They crossed fields filled with landmines. After more than a year and a half of living under the Islamic State, Arif and his family were finally free. They are not alone. Arif and his family have joined 6,000 others in a small Kurdish-run camp. The camp is built on rocks and mud. It is there to take in villagers fleeing the Islamic State as the Iraqi army started its push to retake the area south of Mosul. From interviews with five men, we learn what life was like under the Islamic State. Some of the men are single, some are fathers, and some are only teenagers. Most of them did not give their full names. They said they fear IS will hurt their relatives left behind. The men said they were beaten if they were found with cigarettes. They were fined or whipped if their beards were not long enough. They were fined or whipped if their female relatives did not hide their faces fully with a niqab, or black cloth. And children in school were taught how to count with bullets. Arif is a former Iraqi military man himself. He was one of many Sunnis who stayed in their village when the largely Sunni extremist group Islamic State took over in 2014. Arif is like several of the men who risked their lives to reach this camp. He described a difficult life in his village that soon became unlivable. There were few jobs, and the jobs that were available were badly paid or dangerous. Families were running out of money. IS was running out of money, too. So the militants demanded money from people with threats of physical harm. The men said IS members forced former Iraqi police officers to pay a $2,000 fee or be killed. Ahmed is another refugee living in the camp. He said most IS members get paid very little, about 60,000 dinar, or $50 a month. So they smuggle people to get money for themselves. In Iraq, a pack of cigarettes usually costs 500 dinar, or 50 cents. Under IS, Arif said, it costs 5,000 dinar, or $5. He added that an IS member would convince you to sell cigarettes in the neighborhood. Once you began selling them, they sent another IS member to take the cigarettes and all the money you had made. Among the crowd of men is teenager Saifuddin Muhammad. He said that IS took him and beat him badly for selling cigarettes. "It was a warning," he said. "After that, I stayed home." Schools also cost money under the Islamic State's rule. Many villagers did not have enough money to pay, and their children stayed at home. Ahmed Salah Muhammad is from Kudela village. He said IS schools only teach about bombs, how to use guns, how to identify tanks, and weaponry. Salah Muhammad said IS cared less about the children in villages, but in the cities, they forced children to attend IS-run schools. Wearing a jersey, Salah said when they tried to play football, the militants would come and shoot rounds in the air just to keep us from playing. Salah Muhammad worked as an ambulance driver. I have not received a salary for a year and a half, so it was extremely difficult to support my family. There are no salaries, he said. He tried to sell mobile phones to support his family. But after a while, he said, no one in his community had any money to buy anything. The IS also demanded car owners to register their vehicles. Salah did not have enough money to pay. At that point, he said, he could neither drive the car nor sell it. The Islamic sects known as Sunni and Shiite have been in conflict long before the rise of IS. Now, the Islamic State has declared its Sunni extremist version of Islam as the rule of law it will use. IS claims it will use this form of Islamic law to create a caliphate across Iraq and Syria. Some of the conservative Sunni villagers see life under IS control as normal. No one from IS actually did anything to harm us, said a female relative of Saifuddin Muhammad. They gave us orders to wear the niqab, and we followed it. She said IS gave poor families like hers 50,000 dinar a month. That is equal to $40. But it was not enough. The biggest problem we had was financial. We could not support ourselves. And this applies to most of the families in our village. Men were sitting at home without jobs. We could not feed our children. And the bombings. That is why we left. The men talked about how the Islamic State was quick to punish anyone who spoke against their rules. People who disobeyed or protested would disappear. My brother-in-law was taken by IS a year or so ago. He was a former military commander. No one knows where he is. We don't know if he is in prison or dead, said one young man, standing outside the camp mosque. After a person disappeared, he said, the family of that person would get a single document. The document would state the person was dead. But, the young man said, sometimes a family would get that paper and the missing family member actually returned. They don't want people constantly asking, where is my brother? Where is my brother-in-law? I'm Pete Musto.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.